In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal: to help you score more fantasy points.
Welcome to another edition of the IDP Corner. My name is Justin Varnes. You can follow me on Twitter at DownWithIDP. I'm one of the IDP analysts over at FantasyPoints.com, and with me as fellow IDP analyst and projection specialist for IDP, Mr. Thomas Simons. How you doing, Thomas?
I'm doing great, Justin. Doing just great.
All right, well, let's dive on in here. We actually have almost a full slate of games with no Thursday night games. So we're going to start with a classic rivalry. We're going to start with the Saints at the Falcons.
Yeah, you know, the Saints, they faced a Denver team that was pretty embarrassing. Denver had just 42 plays, 33 rushes, 9 passes, and only one completion. Of course, that happens when you have no quarterback. New Orleans had one sack in that whole game, but it's kind of hard when they only throw 9 times. DeMario Davis did well, though. He had 9 total tackles and 7 solos and 2 assists. What do you see on the Atlanta side?
Well, one of the things that will be nice for the Saints is that Atlanta produces over 30 tackles per game to defensive backs. So this is probably a good week to start Malcolm Jenkins and the other Saints secondary. Now, the last time the Falcons faced the Saints, which was only a couple of weeks ago, the Falcons couldn't get anything done on offense. They only scored 9 points. So they didn't really provide much of an offense for the Saints defense to benefit from. And that was the game, of course, where Cameron Jordan had 3 sacks. We're expecting the Falcons to put up a little bit more of a fight. They have more of their weapons handy. So I think this could be a good bounce back game for Malcolm Jenkins and the Saints secondary. Now, how about for the Falcons? What'd you see?
Well, it's hard to generate fantasy stats when a team like Las Vegas runs the ball just 14 times and they pass 39 times. They did complete 25 passes, but, you know, when you're counting on linebackers like Deion Jones and defensive linemen like Grady Jarrett, it's really, really difficult when a team only runs the ball 14 times. Now, on the flip side, the Saints have been, you know, they've been really fantasy friendly for linebackers, have they not?
Yeah, they have been up until recently. The with the switch to Taysom Hill, the Saints have gone from being an astronomically productive team for linebackers to more of a solidly average team. So we're not saying don't start Luakun and Deion Jones, but because of course you should. But some of these tackle statistics we've seen playing the Saints. 14, 15, 16 tackles from linebackers at times. We have not seen that over the last couple of games with Taysom Hill. So just keep that in mind that maybe the Saints are no longer the cheat code for linebackers we've been able to use them for there without Breeze.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and move on to Detroit and Chicago. You know, the Bears don't have much of a passing attack, but Detroit is pretty much opening their doors for them because their secondary is just shot. We have Jeff Okuda, who had has been dealing with a shoulder injury. They also put Desmond Trufant on IR with a hamstring injury. And, you know, the rest of that crew back there has been really, really dinged. So, you know, even their backups like Mike Ford is dealing with a concussion, even though he practiced in full today. So you're going to be looking at a very depleted Detroit Lion secondary that goes on the road against a team that is just licking their chops to get a offense going.
Yeah, and as if you need another reason to avoid the linebackers here for the Lions, Chicago only produces a league low 17.4 tackles per game to linebackers. And if you consider that the Lions virtually have 17 linebackers of their own that they seem to rotate in, you know, even you can do that math. It's probably not going to be pretty for any one linebacker. So all the more reason, even if you're desperate, this is a matchup I can't endorse.
You know, and on the Chicago side of things, this defense has all of a sudden gone into hibernation. And I think a lot of it is due to the fact that Akeem Hicks is such a key integral part of this defense that you didn't really notice how important he was to this line, to this D, until he sat out a game. And without Hicks last week, Roquan Smith just disappeared. He had 5 assists and that's it. You know, and that's a really big time killer as a Green Bay offensive line kept getting to Smith all day long. And he, you know, they were getting into the second level and putting a body on him. And now Hicks didn't practice Wednesday and was limited today. So you're going to have to watch him for this weekend. But if he's not in there, it's going to affect this defense, especially the linebackers. Now, what else do you think of their linebackers?
Well, as you were saying, you know, with Hicks out, Smith just got swallowed up by those big Green Bay offensive linemen. So it was Danny Trevathan who was basically on mop-up duty behind Smith. So Trevathan had a great game. He only played 68% of the snaps, but he racked up 10 tackles. So, and as Thomas and I have, you know, spoken about plenty, when you have, you know, there are certain linebacking situations, and this is certainly one where every now and then the tables are going to flip and one linebacker ends up loading up on the production. That's just going to happen from time to time. Right. I think that's what happens here. I'm not worried about Roquan Smith. I'm with you, Thomas. If Hicks doesn't play, I'm more worried, but at this point, I think that was just more of a fluke. I'm still going to have to run Roquan Smith out. He's still an LB1. This is just a fluky game. And the last thing you want to do right before you head into your playoffs, or if you're trying to still scratch out a playoff spot, is bench someone like Roquan Smith. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, on to the next one with Indianapolis and Houston. Here's another one where you had a linebacker who didn't play in Bobby Okereke in week 12, and he has yet to practice this week, so there's a good chance he doesn't play this week. Now, Anthony Walker took 100% of the snaps, but he can only produce 6 total tackles, 3 solos and 3 assists. And Zaire Franklin took 44% of the snaps and only produced 2 solos. So what are your thoughts on Darius Leonard if Bobby Okereke doesn't play?
Well, we saw last week, you know, Leonard kind of snapped back to his true LB1 self, and he did that a couple weeks ago too. Like we're seeing flashes of this, 13, 14, 15 tackle guy that we were relying on for a long time. So I do think that, you know, he's got a good chance going forward to remain an LB1. But this week in particular, he's going to need Okereke and Walker and some of those guys to be sitting out or playing fewer snaps, because as a rule, Houston doesn't really produce that much for linebackers. As a matter of fact, they have one of the worst matchups this week, Leonard does, against Houston. So I think this could be one of those weeks where we don't see a 13, 14, 15 tackle week out of Leonard. It might be more like 7 or 8 tackles. But keep in mind, Leonard does get into the backfield. He does have some really nice big play upside, particularly, you know, as they're banged up at running back and at wide receiver. If they end up getting behind in this game, I certainly could see Houston taking more chances, and that's going to lead to more opportunities for Darius Leonard to pad those 6, 7, 8, 9 tackles he's likely to get, with maybe a couple of tackles for loss, a pass defense, some things like that. That should really help him out.
You know, the key to what you're talking about is going to be obviously Deshaun Watson, and without Will Fuller, who's been suspended for 6 games, violating the performance-enhancing substance policy for the league. If Watson holds onto the ball and seeks out the deeper plays, then yes, exactly what you're talking about could come down. If he starts to dump off to like Jordan Aikman or somebody like that, then that could limit Leonard a little bit. Now on the Houston side of things, last week, Terrell Adams had 17 total tackles. He had 14 solos and 3 assists. He added a pass defended, and he had 2 forced fumbles. And you look and compare him to Zach Cunningham, who had 9 total tackles, 6 solos, 3 assists. And you got to wonder what was going on. Well, the problem was Cunningham didn't play almost at least half to 3/4 of the fourth quarter because it was a blowout. So Adams was in there all by himself, and he was just sucking up anything that came his way.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when we saw that snap count that reduced, I think he played like 60-something percent snaps.
Right.
We worry about that because the week before he had somewhere around that range. But, you know, for the most part, this should be Cunningham's defense. I think both these guys should produce pretty evenly. I'm not freaked out by the fact that his snaps were lowered for exactly what Thomas just said. And we're going to talk about that later on with another defense who had some of their star linebackers take a seat in a blowout. This, you know, it's important to know why somebody had a lowered snap count. So the fact that he only played 60-something percent and still put up 9 tackles, 6 of which were solo, shows me that, you know, I think everything's fine here. And I'm expecting Indy and Houston to be a much closer matchup than what we saw on Thanksgiving. So I'm fine to roll out Cunningham. I will say that, that Adams is staying out there no matter what the situation. I'm sure just to get, you know, important reps as this team starts to focus on next year, and they need him to build experience. So it will be Cunningham who will take those snaps off because he doesn't need them as a development player the way Adams does. So if you're trying to decide between the two, you might want to go with Adams because we know he's going to be out there getting his reps. But I'm not at all worried about Cunningham. I think that was just a situation last time.
Yeah, and by us advocating going with Adams, it's not that we think Adams is a better player, as you said. We just think that Adams could see more snaps because they don't want to injure a piece of their future in Cunningham.
Now, if in terms of other Texans players I really like their secondary this week, and particularly Justin Reed. And if you're desperate, I've got a few choices for you. The question is, who is going to take over for the suspended Bradley Roby? And although right now we don't know that answer, there's basically 3 players in the mix here. One is Lonnie Johnson, who has been playing safety, but certainly can play cornerback, has the most experience out there. The other two possibly are Kayon Crossan and Phillip Gaines. Phillip Gaines has been hit and miss as a cornerback. Whoever is out there, you can guarantee that Phillip Rivers will be picking on that person mercilessly. So, if it were me, number one, I'm definitely going Justin Reed because I think he's going to be heavily involved in helping out that side of the ball. And also, if I had to go with anybody else, it would probably be Lonnie Johnson because if he doesn't start at cornerback, he will likely still play safety, which at least gives him some sort of tackle floor that a player like Gaines wouldn't have. How do you see this situation shaking out?
Well, I think you're right. I think Lonnie Johnson could be the one that gets the early quick look. And, you know, after what – look, he didn't play that well against Detroit. And so there's a very strong possibility the Colts come out firing, and they come out firing at him. Now, that could help you – in your fantasy, because the chances are they're going to keep coming after him, which starts to pile up his stats. But if he starts to play like he did against Detroit last week on Thanksgiving, then yes, they could go to Crossan or Gaines very quickly, and Johnson could revert back to a safety position. So it's kind of a tricky situation. If you're desperate, Johnson might be the one to go with because he could get an influx of statistics and stats early because of the fact that he's taking over the Roby spot. And if he starts to play poorly, then he moves over to safety, but stays in the game and gets that buffered front end statistic boost that moving into Roby spot would help him with.
Yeah, and I think that's the key is that Crossan or Gaines might not play at all. You might get a zero, right? So you at least know with Johnson that even if he doesn't play any snaps over there, he still can get you 3 to 6 tackles as one of the third safeties there. And keep in mind that it's not just this one matchup. It's a great number. It's a great matchup by the numbers because the Colts offense creates over 30 tackles per game to defensive backs. That's top 5. So there should be a lot of activity back there. So that's why my favorite of this bunch is Justin Reed, just because of his versatility. And after that, it might be, you know, obviously AJ Moore is someone else to consider, John Reed. But for the most part, I'm either going to target Justin Reed in shallow leagues. And if I had to take a shot here, it would be Lonnie Johnson.
You know, don't sleep on Vernon Hargreaves either, because they like to use him in the slot as the nickel cornerback. But he did take 100% of the snaps last week, and he did have 5 solos and an assist. So Hargreaves might be someone that they take out of his normal position, his normal responsibilities, and slide over to the Roby spot. So it's an influx type of thing, but Johnson should be the one that moves either into Roby's starting position or takes over for Hargreaves in the slot.
Speaking of defensive backs, let's move on to Cincinnati at Miami. We might have seen a defensive back rise from the dead.
Wow, Von Bell had a solid outing in week 12. He posted a team-leading 10 total tackles. You know, he had 7 solos, 3 assists, and a tackle for a loss. And he added 2 big plays with a forced fumble and a fumble recovery. And we've been wanting to get behind Bell for a long time, and it just hasn't been happening. But all of a sudden now, he's awakening, and you're getting to that playoff time. So might be somebody to ride with.
Speaking of Bengals players that we had high hopes for at the beginning of the year and now are maybe finally cashing in on those, that's Sam Hubbard, the defensive lineman. He got banged up in, I think it was the second game of the season. When he got back, he was only playing, you know, 60-ish percent of the snaps, and that's not where Hubbard does his damage. We've discussed this before. Some players thrive on like a 40 to 60% usage. They could just go in there, give it all they've got, and then go take breathers. Other players need those consistent reps to continually wear down an offensive lineman. And so far, Hubbard has been that kind of player. So we were ecstatic to see that this is now back-to-back games where he's had at least 80% usage. And in those games, he's had 11 tackles, 7 solo, and 2 tackles for loss. So I think they're going to keep Hubbard as one of the only kind of like pillars on that defensive line while everyone else rotates. So I think Hubbard, who has DL1 upside, and you can see that by the numbers I just spat out to you, he could easily be somebody you want to be riding through your playoffs as long as he can keep that raised snap count up. And that's probably what he will do against Miami this week.
Speaking of Miami, Raekwon Davis, the youngster, took 60% of the snaps. And he posted a healthy 5 total tackles, 2 solos and 3 assists, but he had 1/2 a sack and a QB hit. So Davis is starting to get those looks, even though this Miami team is still well into a playoff hunt down on the wild card side. You're expecting some bigger things, though, from the rest of the defensive line, yes?
Yeah, Davis, Ogba, Christian Wilkins, this whole defensive line, it should be in for quite an afternoon. The Bengals' weak O-line, yeah, that they're playing like the Bengals now. That's almost a Charlie Brown Christmas special reference there. But the Bengals, their weak O-line continues to be porous. They give up an average of 2 sacks per game. Now they're protecting a backup quarterback, which is always trickier. And also, as of now, the Bengals are likely to trail heavily in this game. So you've got game script, you've got a weak O-line, you've got a backup quarterback, and even if you erased all of those things, you know, as Thomas was just saying about Raekwon Davis, Ogba, Wilkins, these guys are really playing at a high level, even in a more even matchup. So I really like these guys to come through for you this week against Cincinnati.
Yeah, and when you're talking Cincinnati being the second highest sacks allowed with 38, only Philadelphia has more with 40, and they throw the ball 62% of the time, they're just begging for you to sack them. Now, let's move on to Jacksonville and Minnesota. You know, I think we both want to mention at least part of it will be a mention of Miles Jack. He led the team with 9 total tackles, but he only had 3 solos and 6 assists last week. That's, you know, it, granted he had a tackle for a loss, but when you go to hang your hat on somebody, and especially a linebacker 1 or 2, it's really difficult to get behind Jack.
Yeah, and I, you know, part of that reason is that Jack and Joe Schobert, for those of you who are using Schobert, you've experienced this as well. They play in front of a brutal stat crew in Jacksonville. Jacksonville's yes. Stat crew tends to give out more assists than solos, and so there you go. So he had 9 total tackles, and maybe another linebacker on another home team, that would have been 8 solos and 1 assist and a tackle for loss. That's a great week. We're happy with that. But when it's 3-6 like that, it's bad news. So,
and guess what?
It's going to get worse this week. the Vikings are one of the few crews who are actually worse than Jacksonville. They award more assists than almost anyone in the league. So this could be another assist-heavy week for both Schobert and Jack. If you can roll them out there as an LB3 or something this week, then do it. But if you're in shallow leagues and you have options options out there who might be steadier than Jack or Schobert, this might be the week to use them. Because of how much the Vikings run the ball, you're also not afforded a ton of big play opportunities you might in a more pass-heavy offense. So it's kind of a double whammy here, which is unfortunately not what we need during playoff time.
Yeah, and you, 2 things. One, you mentioned the fact that Minnesota can be a run-heavy team, but they've also got a banged-up Dalvin Cook, and they may end up throwing the ball early and often in this one right out of the gate. Especially with the Jaguar secondary being all banged up, you know, and it's like going from the frying pan to the fire in regards to one stat crew compared to another. Now, Eric Kendricks, we've been worried about him recently because we thought we saw him get dinged on a Monday night game. And we worried about the fact that his performance the following week wasn't up to Eric Kendricks' snuff. So, this past week, he took 100% of the snaps, and he put up 12 total tackles, 6 solos, 6 assists, 2 tackles for a loss, had an INT and a PD. Wonderful. Then all of a sudden, this week in practice, he just popped up on the injury report on Thursday and was limited due to a calf injury, which we believe is what was the problem 2 weeks ago. So he's been practicing, you know, he practiced in full supposedly on Wednesday, but who's to say that what kind of practice they actually had? And he was limited today. So we feel you can roll him out there after last week's performance. But if it happens again where he has a down week, then you know that this calf injury is more serious than we thought.
And check out how Kendricks had 12 tackles, but he played at home, so he had 6 solos and 6 assists.
There you go.
That's all the proof you need that this might be a slow week. But hopefully, him sitting out practice or at least being limited in practice is just resting him so that calf will be okay. But soft tissue injuries like this, they're the types of things that can either get reaggravated very easily or prevent you from playing, at 100%. And as Thomas was saying, this is what we've been seeing from Kendricks lately, is he looks like he's more like 80%. So he's probably nursing that calf injury, yes, which is probably why he's not, but granted, we'll still take 12 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, and an interception and a PD any day. Them. So, yeah.
Especially in some of the leagues that you get where you get 5 tackles or more is a bonus. So that's key.
Yeah, for sure. Last week I mentioned the Cleveland Browns defensive line playing the Jaguars, that while Sheldon Richardson, Olivier Vernon, Larry Ogunjobi, these guys have had great seasons, the Jaguars are actually not good for defensive line production, which can seem a little counterintuitive, but their O-line is pretty good, and just the way their offense runs, they don't produce a lot of tackles, nor do they produce a lot of sacks. And sure enough, that's what we got. The Cleveland D-line recorded 0 sacks last week against the Jags, and no defensive lineman had more than 3 tackles. So now if we move over to Minnesota, their opponent this week, there's a good chance that they're going to suffer the same fate. So you're rolling out Ifeti Adenabo as a sneaky pick. Also, DJ Wanham, who's been picking up some steam lately. These have been sneaky plays for us. This is likely going to be a down week for them. So just kind of prepare for that. And if you've been using these guys in start sit situations, you might want to be looking at other players who could fill in at DL2 or DL3 for you.
Yeah, and be leery on Wanham because he came out of the week 12 with an ankle and a back injury, and he hasn't practiced yet on Wednesday or Thursday this week.
Let's move on to the Raiders at the Jets.
Well, Corey Littleton returned from the COVID list, and he took 58% of the snaps. But Nick Morrow was the man, as we had felt would be all along. And Morrow had 10 solos, a tackle for loss, a quarterback hit, two pass defended, and he took 99% of the snaps. So now Littleton may see a slight increase in the snap count, but I'm of the impression, and I know that you and I have talked about it, that Morrow is the one that you should rely on right now. Even, you know, we've also mentioned Kwiatkowski, but I think Morrow is the hot man at this point in time for the Raiders linebackers.
Yeah, often we've seen Littleton and Kwiatkowski play the same role. So they're so in certain packages, they won't be out there at the same time. Ideally, it would be Morrow and Kwiatkowski out there. That's the group that we like best, but they're clearly still trying to get Littleton involved. He obviously does have a particular skill set that the Raiders can rely on. But
right. And last week, as I mentioned, Morrow went 99, I think it was maybe even possibly 100% of the snaps. Kwiatkowski only took 79%, and as I mentioned, with Littleton, his 58%. So it's definitely Morrow who's the one that you should count on.
And in general, this week, it's not a good week for the Raiders linebackers or defensive backs. These Jets offense just can't sustain enough to provide sufficient tackles for the second and third levels of defense. They'll give up big plays, which is good. So you certainly can try to get some pass defense and some interceptions on this team. But if you're looking for a high tackle count out of this game from your Raiders defenders, it's probably not going to happen. It's also been really frustrating because just as Jonathan Abram has been cruising, playing really well, he had an interception last week. He's dealing with some injuries as well. He hasn't practiced yet this week. So, players like Kwiatkowski, Morrow, and Abram, who you might have hoped to rely on this week, Abram might not even be out there. Definitely worried about Kwiatkowski and Littleton. The only guy I'm considering here is Morrow. And even then, I'm more settled in for a 6-7 tackle game than,
And it's not good when the head coach of the Jets comes out and says, "Oh, I haven't developed my quarterback very well." So, and look, let's be honest, the Jets have been a very anemic offense. And when you have a Father Time as your lead running back in Frank Gore, and you've got Sam Darnold, who's the head coach, who said that he hasn't developed properly. This is the reason why what you just stated is going to probably affect your fantasy production and fantasy upside / downside for the Raiders.
Now, what did you see for the Jets?
On the Jets side of things, we worried about Blake Cashman returning, and we didn't know if it was going to affect Harvey Lange and his position next to Neville Hewitt. Well, Cashman played on special teams, and he damaged his hammy, and chances are he's going to be out for a few weeks, maybe not even play the rest of the year. So Lange started and took 90% of the snaps. He only had 8 total tackles, 3 solos and 5 assists, but he did have a big play and a fumble recovery. I mean, Neville Hewitt took 100% of the snaps, and he only had 6 total tackles. Again, though, he was loading up on the big plays. He had a sack, he had a forced fumble, he had a fumble recovery. He also had a tackle for a loss and a QB hit to go along with the 3 solos and 3 assists. So Hewitt's still the one to roll out there with Lange right behind him.
I'm trying to figure out if Quinnen Williams and company can take advantage of whatever the Falcons figured out about how to penetrate this Raiders O-line. The Raiders gave up 8 sacks to the Falcons last week. And, I know Derek Carr got strip sacked three times. It was just a brutal game for what is normally a solid offensive line. They usually give up about a sack a game. They just got murdered last week. So, you know, are they going to be able to find something on film here that Quinnen Williams and these guys can take advantage of? And in particular, we're also watching the reports on whether or not Josh Jacobs plays. He's not practiced for two days in a row. If Jacobs doesn't play, they're likely going to go with Devontae Booker, who has been playing well this season. But if I'm a defensive lineman, I'd much rather try to tackle Booker than Josh Jacobs. So there could be some opportunities here for these defensive linemen.
I think one of the things that affected the Raiders last week was the excellent play of the cornerbacks for the Falcons. With A.J. Terrell and Kendall Sheffield and Isaiah Oliver, I think they did a nice enough job to force Derek Carr to hold on to the ball a lot longer than he normally does. And consequently, it gave their edge rushers and their defensive line the chance to rack up those sacks. Now, when you turn around and you look at the Jets and say, okay, can the Jets do this? Well, I mean, let's be honest. You're talking about guys like Bryce Hall, Arthur Mollett, Lamar Jackson. You know, these guys are not – look, they went out and got Corey Ballantyne, who got cut by the Giants, and he's playing in the secondary for them too. So it's going to be really, really difficult for them to sustain – the you know, or do well in their coverage schemes and give those guys like Williams the opportunity to rack up some sacks. So I think that's where you're going to find the big difference between what happened to the Raiders last week, and this could be a turnaround game for them. So shall we move on to Cleveland and Tennessee?
Let's do it.
The Titans, they run 51% of the time and they pass 49%, which is a 50-50 kind of split. Now the stat crew is a middle of the road, but tend to favor linebackers over DTs and DBs in Tennessee. So there's a possibility that the linebackers could see have a decent game, but I still wouldn't be getting on the BJ Goodson horse right now.
No, neither would I. I mean, I do think Cleveland's IDPs should see a little bit of a bump compared to what they're used to in terms of a solo tackle. So you know, this is really where some of these defensive backs and definitely maybe some of these Cleveland defensive linemen we were just talking about, like Larry Ogunjobi, Sheldon Richardson, these DTs, not only should they have a good matchup with how the Titans run the ball, but also they might get a few more solos than normal. So that should work out well for those, but I agree with you. I'm not starting any of these Cleveland linebackers. Not only are they already a headache, there's four of them and they have, a rotation, and normally BJ Goodson is the man there, but you know, he needs every snap he can get his hands on and every opportunity he gets his hands on just to keep his statistical head above water. And right, with this being a bad matchup, it's dangerous.
And the fact that his snap count went down last week and he was only 85%. And, you know, you take a look at Jacob Phillips, who started to steal some of those snaps. So they've been going with Goodson Smith and Malcolm Smith and Mac Wilson. But you know, when you're taking 85%, 66%, 51% for your starters, that's not a good sign when you consider the fact that even though the stat crew could favor the linebackers, your linebackers aren't getting out on the field as much as you'd like.
How about for Tennessee? What's it looking like for you?
Well, Dave, we talked about David Long last week moving inside and possibly taking snaps away from Rashawn Evans. Well, it turned out the word that we were hearing was that they were going to allow Will Compton to wear the green dot. Well, he only took 41% of the snaps, that being Compton, and Long took 49% of the snaps, whereas Evans took 81. So Long cut into Compton's playing time more than he did Evans, and that could be a sign going forward. So that if you went out and got Compton last week, we're telling you we're telling you right now what the information that we got didn't prove to be what they actually did. So I stick with Evans and know that Long and Compton will likely share snaps.
And I wonder if it was some gamesmanship, because the thing I read came from Rashawn Evans, who said that he was expecting Compton to wear to be the play caller. So I figured, well, if it's coming from his partner there, that's a good chance that we could rely on that. But clearly we couldn't. So sorry about that, all you people who followed us with Will Compton. Our bad.
Well, that's what you get for listening to us.
Yeah, no kidding.
So now what do you think? What's your thoughts on the Tennessee defensive line?
Well, Jeffrey Simmons, is good to see him have another strong game. Last week he had four tackles. He played 76% of the snaps, which is a nice snap count for him. Also got himself a sack. Now, he's banged up a little bit. Is that right?
Yeah, he tweaked his knee, and he didn't practice Wednesday and was limited today.
So hopefully he'll we're going to watch those practice reports carefully, but he's got a really good matchup this week. Cleveland's run game produces 17.5 tackles per game to defensive linemen, which is tied for second most. So Simmons has a nice high tackle floor if he can play. Now, I want to take a second and talk to you guys about Indeed. 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visiting Indeed each month, according to ComScore. That's total visits. So it's clear that Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow. On and to the LA Rams and the Arizona Cardinals. Big divisional game. And I noticed that the only two players on the Rams last week that took 100% of the snaps were John Johnson and Jordan Fuller. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that six of the starters took 75% or more, and five of them took 85% or more. So they're still relying heavily on these starters and not going too much into the depth. So what did you see out of Troy Reader?
Wow. I mean, we'd mentioned him before. He had subbed for Micah Kizer in one game. I think he had like 13 tackles in that game. Now, last week, he got to start again. Kizer is on the IR, so likely we're going to see Reader through our fantasy playoffs, hopefully into weeks 15 and 16. Reader now has 26 tackles and 3 sacks in 2 games starting for Kizer. So I'm super happy to roll out with him this week. I think this is his job. I think he's proven that. And Cardinals are a solid matchup. They produce a slightly above average 21 tackles per game to linebackers. So this is another good week. Reader could actually hit double digits again. If not, I'm expecting him at least in that 8 to 10 range.
Yeah, and he's had 2 starts this year. And in both of those starts, he's hit double digits. He had 11 in total tackles in week 5 and the 15 last week. So now on the Arizona side of things, the Cardinals, really, their defensive line has been banged up, and it's really starting to show. No matter how well their offense does and how they can get out to a lead or even produce points, their defensive line has been banged up and has been giving up too many points of their own, so they end up getting into these shootouts. Now, Zach Allen returned last week for the Cardinals defensive line. He took 79% of the snaps. He only had one solo and two assists with a tackle for a loss. And he got dinged with a possible ankle injury and has been limited in both of his practices this week. So Allen looks like he will play unless he has some kind of a setback and doesn't practice on Friday. But he may not be 100%, and that still can hurt this defensive line for the Cardinals.
This is your weekly reminder to go ahead and keep firing off Haason Reddick. He has been a huge boost for them taking over for Chandler Jones. He continues to produce off the edge for Arizona. He had four tackles, three solos last week on 96% of usage. And Arizona, the Rams have been a really good matchup for defensive lines. So to me, I'm super happy to fire off Reddick again this week. He's clearly going to be out there a bunch. And again, a nice high tackle floor coming into your playoffs with some nice big play upside is something that I'm confident riding Reddick with heading into our playoffs.
You notice how when the Cardinals use Reddick on the inside, he was just a disappointment, couldn't do it. He was a bust, this, that, and the other thing. Well, now they put him as an edge rusher with Chandler Jones down, and wow, what a transformation. And yes, I'm total agreement. Reddick is somebody just to keep riding until the sun goes down and the playoffs are done. Now let's move on to the Giants in Seattle. The Giants face a Bengals team that only had 44 total offensive plays. And when you consider the average for a team in the NFL is around 65 per game, 44 is pretty dismal. And it doesn't bode well for your defense when you're trying to rack up fantasy stats, especially when they run just 15 times and try passing 29 times. So that's one of the reasons why, when you look at the Giants, all over the Giants defense, why their numbers were down last week.
Yeah, like Blake Martinez had a very disappointing game, but that's why we're here, to help you guys realize there's nothing wrong with Blake Martinez. There was just he got himself into a terrible matchup, and he and his entire team suffered for it. However, I do think this week we're going to see the opposite. I think in particular for the defensive line, I'm all in on Leonard Williams, Dalvin Tomlinson, and Dexter Lawrence in that order. Seattle continues to give up tons of fantasy production to defensive linemen, as we saw last week against Philadelphia. The Eagles put up a couple of sacks, and three or four of their defensive linemen had 3 to 5 tackles, a couple of tackles for loss. Really productive across the board for that defensive line, and I think that Williams and company is talented enough to continue to do that this week.
Yeah, and you're looking at a Seahawks offensive line that has given up, I think it's like the third or fourth highest number of sacks in the league. Now, on the other side of the ball, the Seahawks have been desperate for getting sacks for at least the first half of the season. Then they turn around and they get Carlos Dunlop, and we talked in glowing terms of Dunlop last week. Well, he injured his foot this past week against the Eagles, and now he's dealing with this foot injury that sat him, forced him to sit out practice on Wednesday and Thursday. Now, Pete Carroll came in on a press conference and mentioned the fact that they found a slight issue with his foot. When Pete sits there and says, yeah, there's a slight injury, a slight issue, well, that's something to really take into consideration and watch very carefully on Friday to make sure that Dunlop practices, even if it's a limited basis. Because if he doesn't practice on Friday, Pete Carroll is one of those type of coaches that if you don't practice at all during the week, you don't play.
Right, no matter who you are, right. After all that talk about Jamal Adams, how poorly he was playing, et cetera, it looks as though he just wasn't fully recovered from that shoulder injury. He commented a few times before the game, I've been playing with one arm, but now I'm healthy, and he sure proved it. He went out and played a more Jamal Adams-like game. Actually, did really well in coverage. People had been kind of questioning his coverage skills, and he went out, looked like specifically to prove these people wrong. So that really has kicked Adams into high gear here. So I love him being aggressive against Colt McCoy, particularly if Dunlap's out. They're going to be using Adams heavily as a pass rusher.
You know, and I saw against the Eagles there was a couple of times, in particular one sack that he had where he came off the edge and he came busting. First of all, he wasn't blocked, and that's a no-no with Jamal Adams, because if you give Adams a free run at your quarterback, 9 out of 10 times he's going to put him on the ground. And in this particular case, he came from the left side, and he was coming down the line, and it seemed like he was hesitating at first, and then all of a sudden he exploded and chased, I think it was Wentz, went as far as the tackle, and boom, down he went. And the speed and the acceleration that I saw out of Adams is what I've seen all along this year, with or without a shoulder injury. This guy is just all over the place and can be used. I mean, they showed us a statistic on the show on the Monday night game that they've used him in every position, strong safety, free safety. They used him deep. They've used him in the slot. They use him at corner. They use him off the edge in blitz packages. They use him rushing the quarterback up the middle. I mean, this guy is a do-it-all. Now, speaking of Philly, ouch. You know, Seattle's offense sputtered in Week 12 a little bit, and even though they sputtered, it was a concern that Alex Singleton had a down game. Now, he only had 3 solos and 2 assists and a tackle for a loss. You know, I know that Duke Riley was a factor in one of the reasons why Alex Singleton had a kind of a down game. But, you know, we're also worried about Nate Gerry coming back. So if Gerry comes back and Singleton is just all of a sudden becomes – I wouldn't say a bench player, because he's played well enough to earn snaps, but his snap count could go down and his production, as you saw last week, could be something similar. So yes, he took 100% of the snaps last week, but Duke Riley took over half less snap count and had almost as much production.
Yeah, and one thing that we'll be watching carefully this week is, you know, for those of you who watched the game, obviously it was DK Metcalf versus Darius Slay. That was I think Slay had like 12 or 13 tackles. That's, you know, so much of the offense was focused on trying to make that happen. And as you were saying, Thomas, their run game just couldn't get going. That combination may have led to Singleton not putting up those snaps, but it doesn't change the fact that we're waiting to see what's going to happen here with Nathan Gerry. Does he eventually get this job back? So, if you can start him as a linebacker 2 or 3, I'm fine with starting Singleton. If you're expecting linebacker 1 production out of Singleton, no. You might want to look elsewhere. If this game is super important to you this week, and like if you're listening to this, it's likely because you're either in the playoffs or you're trying to still make the playoffs. We're a little worried about Singleton's floor. He could have a great game, but if you have somebody who is more steadier, an Alexander Johnson or somebody like that that you can put in place of Singleton, this is the week where I don't think I can take that risk, because Gary's knocking on the door.
Yeah, and Green Bay is not fantasy friendly for linebackers.
Yeah, Philly does have a dominant D line, which we've seen plenty of this year, particularly against Seattle. But this is not Seattle's O line. This is a totally different beast here. Green Bay remains the stingiest team for defensive lines, and they faced some good ones this year. So although Philadelphia does have one of the better defensive lines, Green Bay has seen a ton of great lines. They've seen Chicago a couple times this year, so they know what they're doing. And I also think that Rodgers has gotten better and more comfortable in this offense, where he's getting rid of the ball quicker, and they've schemed things up where they don't have to wait for Rodgers for a play to develop. So they've also been smarter about that. It's not just the quality of the offensive line, which is super high. It's also how they've schemed this offense to keep Rodgers from taking so many sacks. So this could be a slower week for Philadelphia. I'm, again, come playoff time, I'm still starting these guys if I don't have a better option. But in shallower leagues, I might be looking elsewhere.
Yeah, you know, Fletcher Cox also injured his neck last week and didn't practice yet on Wednesday or Thursday. So you're going to have to keep an eye on his practice status on Friday. Now, last week, Chicago ran just 16 times and they passed 46 times. And even though he took 100% of the snaps, Christian Kirksey got mauled because of that. He only had 5 total tackles, 2 solos and 3 assists and a PD. So it really, really killed his fantasy value with the fact that the Bears only ran 16 times. Now, being that the Eagles are, they're facing the Eagles this week, you know, the Eagles themselves are notorious for passing more than they run the ball. They've run, I think they've run it 39% of the time and passed it 61%. So Kirksey could be facing another one of these pass first, run second type of offenses.
Yeah, and unlike Philly's defensive line, who is likely going to be up for a taller task than usual, this is a good week for Kenny Clark and company. This Philly O-line gives up 15 tackles and almost 3 sacks per game. So they are piling up the numbers for defensive line. So Kenny Clark, a good sneaky play this week, particularly in DT-required leagues.
Yeah, the Eagles have given up 40 sacks this year, and that's the highest in the NFL. So I could see the Smith brothers going crazy in this one, too.
For sure.
Shall we move on to New England and Los Angeles?
Let's do it.
So Adam Butler has been in stepping in for Byron Carwart, who was a healthy scratch last week. So I'm not sure if there was an injury that we don't know about or what the reason was, but Butler had another solid outing, posting 5 total tackles. He had 4 solos and an assist. Now he was in the backfield all day long. He had a sack. He had 3 quarterback hits, 2 tackles for loss, along with a pass defended. So Butler's a nice play to roll out especially in deep leagues and or tackle DT required leagues.
Yeah, actually, I like almost all of the defensive linemen this week. Chase Winovich, Lawrence Guy, even John Simon. No team produces more tackles to defensive linemen than the Chargers. And with Austin Ekeler back, they're going to continue to lean on their workhorse running back. You know, last week they were going to ease in Ekeler, and I don't remember how many touches he had, but it was plenty to get the job done. He definitely worked like a bell cow back. So I do think that they won't have any issues shying away from the run here. So I do think that this could be solid. Yeah. DT required leagues, tackle heavy leagues. This could be a really good week for this New England defensive line. They, when they play well and when they get the right matchups, these guys can put up 5 to 7 tackles easily for defensive linemen, the way Belichick runs these guys out in these sort of like bare fronts, etc. So lots of production could flow their way this week. What'd you see from the Chargers?
Well, it's frightening on their linebacking side of things when you consider that Kazir White was out. He was put on the COVID-19 list. And then Denzel Perryman took just 35% of the snaps, posting 4 total tackles because he injured his back. So Nick Vigil stepped in, took 66% of the snaps, and had 6 solos, 2 assists, a PD, and a forced fumble. So their linebacker, I mean, Murray's still the man taking the most snaps in the center of this defense, but it looks like Vigil, especially if White stays on the COVID list, Vigil could be somebody sneaky that you could get in as a linebacker 3 in your league and be, you know, especially in tackle heavy leagues. Now, Melvin Ingram has been declared pretty much out for the season. So how do you think that hurts or helps Joey Bosa?
Well, Ingram didn't play last week, and it didn't seem to affect Joey Bosa much at all. We mentioned here last week that he had, in week 11, he had just 2 assists, but he had 5 quarterback hits. And that usually means that he just got incredibly unlucky. Well, last week, he also had 5 QB hits. And listen to what he produced on those 5 QB hits. He had 3 sacks.
Boom.
A fumble. He got 8 tackles. He had 6 tackles for loss. He had a pass defense. This guy was everywhere. He actually scored the second highest fantasy points in a game for an IDP this year. The other happened also last week in Jeremy Chinn because he scooped up 2 fumbles for a touchdown. That's not bad. But this is what we meant by, like, you have to ride out these elite DLs, particularly this year. We have so few of them left. We don't have Danielle Hunter. We don't have Chandler Jones. We don't have Nick Bosa. There's a lot of these guys who are missing time, and it's almost like tight ends. If you have one of those rare elite players, even in down weeks or in quote unquote poor matchups, the upside is just too much to pass up because they could literally win you your league, particularly now come championship season. So, and also, Jerry Tillery on the other side has really played well in place of Ingram. He also played well in place of Bosa. So he does provide a presence over there. Tillery is a sneaky play if you need help off the edge, because obviously New England's going to do everything they can to pay attention to Joey Bosa this week. So that might actually allow Tillery to slip through the back door a couple of times.
Indeed. All right, Sunday night.
Denver at the Chiefs. What'd you see coming from the Denver side of things? Well, I mean, obviously it was a very interesting game across the board for Denver. But how do you think that's going to affect what happens here with Kansas City?
Well, the Saints ran the ball 44 times and they only passed 16. Now, granted, it was Taysom Hill behind under center, and that is going to be a major point when you talk about the fact that they ran the ball that many times. You know, the Daquan Jones led the team with 9 total tackles. He had 5 solos and 4 assists, tackle for a loss and a QB hit. You know, right behind him was AJ Johnson with 8 total tackles, 7 solos and an assist, also a tackle for a loss. And he had a big play and a forced fumble. So you're looking at a Kansas City team that will go out there and do what they've been doing all year long. And that's pretty much they have been running the ball less than what you would think. They've only run it like 39% of the times, and they passed it 61%. This is a week where I could see that number go up a little bit as far as the run goes. I could see him in the 40 to 45 range, you know, especially CHE is possibly out. Well, I wouldn't say possibly out. He's dealing with an illness, and we all know that when we start talking about illnesses these days, you have to wonder if it's COVID related, and if it is, then he'll end up on the COVID list. And now we're talking on Thursday night, Friday morning, Saturday afternoon. If they go on a COVID list at that point in time and it's not retro back to beginning of the week, they're out. And that means that they're going to rely heavily on Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah. And I also want to mention in terms of their production for defensive linemen, Chiefs give up 15 tackles per game to defensive line. And they are, they're really stingy with sacks though. So if it's a run heavy game, a little bit more run heavy, like you're predicting, Thomas, and I can absolutely see that, then these Denver defensive linemen should do okay on tackles. But this is another team that schemes very well to keep Patrick Mahomes clean. Mahomes is obviously nimble in the pocket. He's really difficult to sack. So because of that, this could be a slow game for both Bradley Chubb and Malik Reed. Both of them have had really good seasons. You know, Malik has had he's really been a surprise for us and somebody we've been able to use in edge rushing leagues. But this is likely going to be a tough week for them. If Kansas City gets out to a lead and they run the ball a lot, there'll be fewer and fewer sack opportunities. And even in an even matchup, it's really hard to bring down Patrick Mahomes. So let's not expect too much out of Chubb and Reed this week.
Yeah, and it's going to be cold. I mean, it'll probably be partly sunny to partly cloudy. But once the sun goes down, which we all know nowadays, it goes down a lot quicker than normal, it's going to be around freezing or below. So it could be a very cold outing. Now, Tampa Bay ran the ball 13 times last week, and they passed 41, completing just 21. So tackles, you know, the Kansas City defense is going to be, I don't know how you would say it, they're going to be hard-pressed, especially if Denver goes into this same. Even if they get a quarterback back, they make too many mistakes. They're going to try and pass the ball a lot more than they run it, at least of what they did last week. Though I can see them throwing it at least more than 9 times. But you have to wonder just how quickly this game is going to get out of hand. And will the starters start losing snaps because it's a blowout and they're starting to spread the workload out on everybody.
Yeah, for sure. We mentioned last week that Daniel Sorensen, who saw a dip in production in week 11, that was due to his high number of snaps at deep safety. Normally he plays about, 60% of the time up in the box and about 30% of the time at deep safety. Well, in week 11, that was flipped. He played a major role at deep safety, and that had us worried because he only put up four tackles. Well, last week we saw it flip-flop back to where it was, where he played more in the box than he played deep. He had seven tackles, which is a solid number in that game. He's been the number two defensive back since he took over the starting job. And also, for facing Denver, Denver is the number one team for opposing defensive back production. A lot of that is coming in the form of big plays, and Sorensen himself is no stranger to big plays. So this could be a solid week for Sorensen. Again, I'm worried about what Thomas is worried about for all these KC defenders. If this ends up being a massive blowout as KC starts to ramp up to making the playoffs, they're going to start sitting some of their stud defensive players. So that might end up hurting some snaps, but I honestly think that there's enough production early in this game to where I'm still going to start my guys. I think they could front load it and then take the back end off, and we'll be okay with that. Let's move on to the Monday night game. Let's wrap this puppy up.
All right, we got two Monday night games this week.
And a Tuesday night game. Oh my gosh,
and a Tuesday nighter.
I'm so programmed seeing one Monday night game. We have more to do, folks.
That Baltimore Pittsburgh game on Wednesday, when we're doing this Thursday night, it definitely messed me up. Kind of like changing the clocks to standard time and so on, forward and back does to people. It just messed me up. And so here's a game that was supposed to be played on on Sunday, has now been moved back to Monday. Now, Washington, in their last game, they had four sacks, and Montez Sweat had a pick six. He recorded a pick six as the team posted 11 big plays. So this defense is really, really starting to roll it out and be a very difficult team. And after playing Baltimore in what was a really screwy week where the game got postponed three times and they ended up playing it on Wednesday, Pittsburgh could be in for a down game. And if they run up against a really tough Washington defense, this could be a struggle for them.
Yeah, as somebody we really like on Washington, who we think has steadied this defense and picked up a lot of those big plays, Thomas, that you were just mentioning, was Cameron Curl. Over the last 4 weeks since Curl took over the starting job from Apke, no defensive back has more tackles. He's got 37 tackles, two sacks, and also he's put up 67.5 fantasy points. So monster statistics for Curl. Last week with DeShazer Everett out, the other safety position was split between Jeremy Reeves and Troy Apke. None of that seemed to affect Cameron Curl. So we really like Curl in this matchup, particularly for as much as Pittsburgh can throw the ball and probably will. This could be another good week for Cameron Curl. Speaking of Pittsburgh, how are things looking there? Anything in particular you want to highlight from the Steelers?
Oh, yeah. If you watched the game last night, Bud Dupree went down on a non-contact play, and as soon as he went down, you knew it was his knee. And the way he was pounding the ground and the way they took him off the field, you knew it was a serious injury, and that's exactly what it was. He tore his ACL. Bud Dupree is done for the year. So that means that, okay, two things here you have to worry about. One of them is who's replacing him, and Alex Highsmith is the one who stepped in and will likely replace him. Highsmith does not have the pedigree that Dupree has, so offenses are going to be, down the line, are going to be focusing more on where TJ Watt is, and they're going to put their running backs to that side, and they'll use tight ends and running backs to, I wouldn't say double team Watt, but they'll do a lot of definite bumping on him before he gets to the offensive lineman that is going to be taking care of him. So Watt is going to have to fight through a lot more traffic than he's normally used to with Dupree missing. And I don't see Highsmith achieving Dupree's, pressure from the outside. So this could be a big concern for this defense. Now, there's also the inside linebackers. What are your thoughts on the inside linebackers?
Well, we've been we continue to mention Avery Williamson. We know that they grabbed him for a reason, but it's clearly not to start. Well, he's starting to move up the depth chart now. He played 41% of the snaps last week. The majority of that playing time was at the expense of Vince Williams rather than Robert Spillane. Williamson played 41%. Williams played 64%. Spillane played 81%. Still, I want nothing to do with these guys. Spillane has been an LB4 over the last month. So, he had a huge tackle game his first start. He had a so-so game in his second start, except he got an interception, which helped boost his fantasy value. Since then, he's kind of settled into a 6-7 tackle guy, and considering that Williamson is kind of chipping away at their snap counts, this is a dangerous week to start Spillane unless you're starting a measure LB4 and then go ahead and fire him out. But right. I certainly don't want to start Vince Williams, and I'm certainly not comfortable starting Williamson either. So Spillane is an LB4. I don't want either of the other two guys.
The other Monday night contest is Buffalo at San Francisco. Now, A.J. Klein had another massive outing. He had 14 total tackles. 10 of them were solos, and he posted 4 assists. Now, he had a sack and a half, 3 tackles for loss, 2 quarterback hits, and a PD. You know, that's pretty solid, but...
Yeah, this is an issue here with... if we're going to consider that Matt Milano might be coming back. I mean, well, he's designated to return to the IR. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to play this week, but, if he does, if we see him practicing at all, or even that he's active for the game, this is going to be a bad situation for Klein. Not only that, but they had a great matchup last week. They had the best matchup of the week, and both Klein and Tremaine Edmonds hit. I think Edmonds had 11 tackles, and as you mentioned, Klein had 14. This, however, is an okay. This is a solid matchup. The Niners produce 22 tackles per game to linebackers, but not, this like 26, 28 tackles that that Buffalo linebackers put together last week. So if Klein plays, you're probably looking more like you're hoping to get like between 7 and 9. He's probably not going to put up one of these massive games again. And that's even if he plays.
Yeah. And if Milano returns, because he was designated to return, it only means that they have now allowed him to practice, and he has a 20-day window opened on him where they have to make a decision. Now, that decision can be made in 5 days. It can be made in 16 days. It can be made in 21 days. The fact of the matter is Milano is at least back to practicing, and when they put him in the lineup, they're going to take their time with him because of the fact that, look, they tried to bring him back early in the season after the first time he injured his pec muscle, and he played 2 games, boom, went down, re-injured the pec. Sat out, came back, played 2 more games, boom, went down again, and has been out since. So they've seemed to rush him back two times already. So the next time they bring him back, with the playoffs looming, they're going to want to make sure that they take care of this guy and don't overwork him and don't rush him back. So Klein will still get his snaps, and Klein will still play, but don't expect the 14 total tackles that he got last week.
For sure. What did you see for the Niners?
Richard Sherman returned. There's a blast from the past. He took 100% of the snaps, and he led the team with 7 total tackles. He had 7 solos, 8 total tackles. He had 7 solos and an assist. Tackle for a loss. He had an INT as well. So he brings stability to the defensive backs, and that's a huge thing for these 49ers, especially on that defensive side of the ball where they've been so depleted at the cornerback position. Sherman is not the Richard Sherman that he was when he was with Seattle, but he's still a solid fantasy option, and he does bring veteran leadership to those young cornerbacks that the 49ers have.
Yeah, and overall, the 49ers defense had been playing better as of late. Richard Sherman returning absolutely helps that. It helps make that entire defense click. When you've got a more reliable set of cornerbacks, it allows you to put some stronger support with your slot corner, with your three safety sets. If you it's like you take out your elite cornerback, and then everyone else has to like rotate one player around, and then that leaves a deficiency somewhere. Usually it's slot cornerback, or maybe at dime linebacker, dime safety sort of a thing. So getting a Sherman back in there makes a huge difference. They've been playing a lot better as of late. It also helps players like Kerry Hyder and Eric Armstead. They've been a big part of the 49ers defensive turnaround. And just look what Joey Bosa did last week on Buffalo, the hurting he put on that offensive line. So Hyder and Armstead may have an opportunity to get home a few times themselves this week as we start to see this defense become stronger. All right, we're going to go to that very special. Everybody's excited about the Tuesday night football game, the Christmas season tradition of Tuesday night football.
Dallas at Baltimore. Now, this was one that was supposed to be played Thursday. So, Baltimore is just they're getting their games all moved around, and the whole COVID experience, and it's all come down to the fact that a coach screwed up and didn't follow protocol, and then this whole COVID-19 exploded, and the virus exploded on this team, and really has put a hurting on them and their playoff run. Now, on the Dallas side of things, DeMarcus Lawrence got dinged last week, and Randy Gregory stepped up and posted three solos and had two sacks. He had two tackles for a loss and two quarterback hits along with those two sacks. So Gregory was in the backfield and quite frequently last week on Thanksgiving Day, and is looking relatively good considering that he's been out for so long.
Yeah, going from Thursday night all the way to the next Tuesday basically gave Dallas, in effect, an extra bye week. I mean, that's a huge break for them. Yeah. Now, granted, they'll pay for it coming into next week. But for now, I think these guys are going to come in fresh. So Leighton Van Der Esch, Jalen Smith, they both saw lowered snap counts last week as both Sean Lee and Joe Thomas worked in for about 20-25% of the snaps each. But that was mainly because Dallas was getting blown out by the fourth quarter. So if you looked at those snap counts for Van Der Esch and Smith and got worried, or you just in general didn't get the type of production you were hoping to get, that was just, man, what an ugly game that turned real ugly for Dallas real quick. A couple of poor decisions, or let's at least agree to say it was poor execution, where Dallas went for it on fourth down in their own territory a couple of times. And obviously that's going to put your defense in a terrible spot. That's what happened. And then before long, they were getting blown out. So what are you going to do? You're going to sit your starters, give them a few extra snaps off. So, I'm not expecting that situation this week with Dallas being a little healthier and Baltimore being banged up. This should be a closer matchup than what they saw on Thursday.
Indeed. And Baltimore will, there's a strong possibility that they'll get some players back. Brandon Williams was activated from the COVID list last week, but he was inactive for the game, whereas Calais Campbell has yet to come off the COVID list. There's a handful of players that could come back off the list sometime in the next few days. I know that Chuck Clark injured his groin, but he did return to the game and finish the game. And I know that Marcus Peters was, at first it looked like a leg issue, but it turned out to be cramps, and he returned as well. So the Ravens could be getting healthy just at the right time.
Speaking of that Ravens defensive line, this could be another good game for Derek Wolfe. He had a solid game last week. Even though he dealt with an ankle issue, he came back and still had a solid game. Dallas is the number one opponent for DL production. They give up 15 tackles per game and two sacks per game. So this could be a solid week, particularly if Campbell and Williams come back. We're going to see some activity up here up front. Would love to get a healthy Calais Campbell in on this matchup. He could really do a lot of damage and boost you into the playoffs from one of your defensive lineman spots. Okay, that's gonna wrap us up here. For Thomas Simons, my name is Justin Varnes. We are the IDP analysts over at fantasypoints.com. You can check out the site. We have some great specials on the site to kind of close out the end of the year deals. So some heavily discounted rates to get you through the playoffs. Some great offensive minds, obviously, with John Hansen, Graham Barfield, Joe Dolan, NFL insider Adam Kaplan, NFL films analyst Greg Cosell. A lot of great minds working and also some great DFS guys as well. So plenty of opportunities there if you need some last minute help to get you into your playoffs, IDP wise or otherwise. Check out fantasypoints.com. Thomas, why don't you take us out of here, buddy?
Be well and be safe.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.